fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames hockey talk.
Flames spoiled Johnny Gaudreau's return, but not without a steep price as Tanev goes out injured. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, hosted by Brad Brood and Kyle Lewis. We are rolling to episode 151. Kyle, how are you doing this evening?
Much better than I was a week ago, conspicuous by my absence due to lovely illness that seems to be going around, but we're good to go. How are you?
I'm good. I'm kind of a mess right now. I feel like I'm forgetting something here or whatever, but we're rolling. We're good. We're good.
Well, lots to discuss, of course.
There is a lot this week.
Fairly eventful week.
It was a fairly eventful week. Hockey Day in Canada Saturday. I thought the game Saturday afternoon was one of the better games, entertainment-wise, I guess, that I've watched this year.
Definitely, and I think a lot of people had argued as well that it may have been one of the more complete Flames efforts of the season as well, which that's how I felt watching it anyway.
Yeah, I did too. When that game was over, I did not feel good when they came back and got ahead of us a little bit, but all in all, a really good performance. And I spent most of that day watching hockey, which was kind of nice, a kind of relaxing day. And I don't know, that was a good day. I got a question for you. I got to confess something. I actually this week felt slightly sorry for Vancouver Canucks fans.
Well, I mean, I felt sorry for Bruce Boudreau more than anybody, but I have to agree with that because at the end of the day, a situation like I presume that's what you're referring to is the handling of that situation by Jim Rutherford.
I kept putting myself as like, okay, well, if this was the Flames, how would I handle this? Like, how would I feel? You know, and it was frustrating. It was an embarrassing situation.
I was very embarrassed by it as a hockey fan. And, you know, even Rutherford's comments after the fact, and he kind of brushed off some of the blame, and it just brushed off. Oh, it was just.
It was so millennial. It was just so like, well, it's not my fault. Wasn't it though?
Oh yeah, he should be terminated just for that, because that to me is probably the most unprofessional, handling of a sensitive situation I've ever seen.
Peter came out and just said, I mean, Peter just came out and said, you know what? When I look back at this, I realize how much I botched this situation. And it's embarrassing for me. It's embarrassing for the organization. I apologize to the fans. I apologize to Boudreau. I apologize to the organization. This is on me, man. And it's not a good look, and I'm sorry. I'd have been like, okay.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm hopefully he loses his job, quite frankly, and I wouldn't normally say that about anybody, but that's no excuse for that. And he's made a lot of money in a lot of different roles over the years in the NHL as a player on up. And, when I watched that press conference, I just kept thinking like, this is a guy that's got to be put out to pasture. He's done.
Yeah. It's not a good look.
Not at all.
I had to laugh too. I saw a thing today on the internet. The Canucks are paying over $7 million.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. Yeah, as a fan of a divisional rival, we have to laugh at that and enjoy it.
Too bad it doesn't count against the cap, huh?
Oh, yeah. Of course, that team's in enough mess as it is.
Yeah. Oh. I welcome those messes for them.
Don't we all?
We got a lot to talk about on the show today. We're going to talk about two wins. We're going to talk about a Hockey Day in Canada victory over Tampa Bay and an overtime victory versus Johnny Hockey and the Columbus Blue Jackets. We'll dive into the highly anticipated return of Johnny Gaudreau and how that went, our thoughts on that. And then we'll give our take on Sutter's comments on Jacob Peltier and where that whole controversy sits now. And that's been interesting to say the least.
Absolutely. We'll
touch on the Tanev injury, cap space stuff, Sutter milestone, and we'll wrap with a preview of the two games that lie ahead before the extended super long break. It's time for another edition of Flames Unfiltered. We'll start with Saturday's game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa Bay beat us earlier in the year, and this one started off with a Calgary goal right away. Nazem Kadri gets us on the board. And I thought what the first period was one of the better played first periods by the Flames. I was pretty impressed with that. Vladar was in net. It was kind of all systems go right from the get-go, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. I think a lot's been made about the Flames having so many first period goals this year. But I mean, that hasn't really yielded a lot of great results in terms of the way the games have gone. So I thought that period was a lot more complete than most of what we've seen from them, especially of late.
Things got pretty wild in the second period as Tampa Bay roared back and scored a couple quick ones.
Oh, that Stamkos shot, man, that was something. Oof.
You know, have you been, when you watch the games this year, how often are you looking at it going, is this the night we finally get a shutout? Do you do that a lot? Cause I catch myself.
I used to, but I gave up on it about 3 weeks ago. I brought that up on our show probably 3 weeks ago. Yeah. And I just, I don't know. I figure if I think it won't happen, maybe it will.
probably a good point. Good news, Calgary did come roaring back on this one. Toffoli and Anderson get on the board, and the Flames head into the third period with a 3-2 lead. Dubé adds another one, 4-2, and then Tampa Bay does get another goal, but then the Flames finally did it. They finally, like, locked down, and it wasn't a scramble fest for the final second, and they were able to add a couple empty net goals to secure the deal.
Nice to pad your goal differential like that every once in a blue moon, too.
We need that kind of right now, just for confidence. Dylan Dubé, another clutch goal. And his play as of late has really, really changed. I feel like it's a different player than the first couple weeks of the season. Your thoughts on that, Kyle?
As we talked about a few times, I picked him to be a breakout candidate for really no other reason than the fact if he was ever going to, this would probably be the year, but he offensively just looks a lot more confident, and he's making the most of his opportunities, both that Tampa game and most recent game as well against Columbus. I mean, he's been a completely different player in the offensive zone, and man, he's got a hell of a shot too. He's got a really, really underrated wrist shot, I find.
He does. His speed has really been a factor lately. For a team that I would consider, if somebody asked me, do you think the Flames are a slow team? I would say, yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
He's kind of a bright spot in that aspect, and that definitely helps out. I still don't know if I can sit and look at him and say, yeah, he's a first line left winger in the National Hockey League, but quite honestly, he's done a pretty damn good job in the role he's in right now.
Well, he's starting to look more and more like a top six forward. And I think, obviously that's exactly what the Flames need, is a little more offensive capability in their lineup. And the way he's been playing, and then of course, Sandro Mangiapane as well in that Tampa game and against Columbus, like, looks like he's finally starting to wake up too. And you get those two guys going, that alleviates a lot of concerns.
Well, it does. It changes everything. And, we get them going, and Kadri's been good lately, and I know Huberto is still taking heat, but I feel like he's been fairly decent lately. Mm-hmm. And Toffoli keeps scoring, and boy, the top six is looking, actually the top nine is looking pretty solid right at the moment.
Absolutely. Columbus, and even Lucic, and he'll throw his weight around a little bit more.
Let's talk about that. Columbus comes into town last night, and Lucic throws down about mid-first period I'd probably say that was one of the best tilts I've seen in the league this year.
I don't know of a better one. Actually, there's a few than Dennis Gilbert when he was with the team. He had a couple that were quite good. But, I mean, for a guy Lucic size, yeah, that was one of the best ones there for sure.
They both landed a lot of big shots. Oof.
Yeah. Yeah, big time. Kind of scary watching it, honestly.
I was waiting for one to go down with, you know. Yeah. Those do get a little scary. Dan Vladar gets a start last night. Dan Vladar has been really good lately. I know everybody says, well, Dan Vladar only wins because the team puts up points when he's in net. And I really don't care what the reason is why we put up. Why are we digging into why are we making that a problem in Calgary? We're making everything a problem in Calgary this year. I look at it as if he's getting the wins, and that's really all I care right at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's been better of the two. I don't think there's any question about that. And the team looks more confident when he's in net. So we've been saying on the show for a while now that he should be starting more. And hopefully that's the way it's going now. It certainly seems to be the case.
I was just reading today that he's 9-0-3 in his last 12 appearances dating back to November 29th. And as a result, he owns the point streak, he owns a point streak that ranks him tied just behind. Okay, Mike Vernon has a point streak of 13. Brian Elliott has 13 and Vladar sits at 12. That's pretty impressive. That he's been able to do that when I think if you ask almost any of us, we would say the Flames have been okay. I don't think many people would say the Flames have been good lately.
No, finding ways to win, which is a hallmark of a good team, but that's a team that's slowly turning the corner. There's been no real very convincing wins of late.
No, there really hasn't. And, but you know, you go and you look at the standings and it's like, I don't know. We're not in that bad of a position really.
No, they keep hanging around. I mean, eventually they got to go on a bit of a tear here to lock themselves a spot or create some distance, especially that division being the way it is. But it's,
5 points back of first. We're 5 points back of first.
Yeah. Well, everybody's pretty much, if they're not in first, or pretty damn close to it in the Pacific. So
it has, the top five have really, really tightened up in the last week.
Big time.
Walker Dewar scores a great goal last night. And, one that, I don't know, everybody was kind of chuckling about because I didn't see it. Did you? I did not know where the puck was.
I didn't know initially. Now when I watched it back, I thought it was kind of funny because it's not often a guy shoots a puck that hard and it's on the ice, right? Yeah. In fact, it's very rare, I find, to shoot a puck like that. I mean, that's what caused all the confusion. If that was top corner, wouldn't have been any question, but because it was so low to the ground, it's like, where is it? That went in? Like,
Daryl Sutter even said, he goes, I had no clue that went in. He said, I had no clue. Kind of interesting one. Johnny Gaudreau, it's his big return, and I went exactly like I expected, minus I didn't think that he'd get a penalty shot.
Well, I don't think anybody predicted that, but I think that his return went exactly the way it should have, which is to say he got a very nice standing O that he absolutely deserves. And then
he got booed.
Which is what you do when, you know, LeBron left Cleveland or whatever example you want to use. I mean, I'm sure he expected that. And I certainly wouldn't say he deserves it, but that is sports and he handled it very, very well. He said a lot of really nice things. You know, I didn't care for a lot of the mudslinging and all the kind of stuff that went on the internet where people dragging his family into it and trying to come up with reasons why he left. I mean, the reality is he left.
He was, I don't think it matters anymore, does it? I mean, I just kind of looked at it last night was just kind of a turning of the page.
I certainly hope so.
Was I upset that he left? Hell yeah.
I was very upset. It was devastating. Even watching him out there in a Columbus jersey doing all the things he does so well, it's like, man, I miss that.
But having him, you know, there's two sides of that though, but like having him like lead us on to the last minute, I'm always going to call him a traitor. It doesn't mean I didn't cheer for him when he was here. And that doesn't mean I don't think he's a good hockey player. I do.
Yeah. I mean, the flip side of that is, as we found out more recently, that, you know, the Flames had a part in his departure too. Like they didn't put their best foot forward in a lot of the negotiations, from what I understand. So I try to look at it from both sides, but I think at the end of the day, the way that return went is exactly how it should have gone. And I don't think he would tell you any different.
The thing is, like, I can't imagine he's happy in Columbus.
Well, Columbus is a beautiful city. So on a personal level, I suspect he's happy. Professionally, I don't think he could have imagined that a team that should have had Zach Werenski for the year, him playing with Laine, and, you know, Jack Roslovic, some other good players there, certainly shouldn't be as bad as it has been, but that's the way it's gone.
I thought the Calgary fans handled it pretty good. Lots of signs, booed during warmups, booed during the game. I thought it was hilarious that Columbus's players booed him during the morning skate.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
I have a feeling Erica Branson might have led that.
I saw one sign that was pretty hilarious. It said, "Hey, Johnny, Meredith wants you home by 10. I thought that was hilarious.
Oh, Frank.
I thought it was well done. I think the fans handled it completely appropriate. I do. I thought it was handled pretty well. More anticipation on this one, I guess, than probably the Tkachuk one, but I don't know. I mean, Tkachuk was probably more blatant than Johnny Gaudreau. He just flat out said he didn't want to play here. Yeah. They probably should be more mad at him, I guess, but.
Well, in a way, yeah. But I mean, Johnny Gaudreau was as good as Tkachuk was and as, you know, agitating as he was, kind of player you want to have. Gaudreau was an absolute superstar most, if not all, of his time in Calgary. So that always makes it sting a little bit more, I find.
I thought, you know, one of the things too, I thought he handled the media really good yesterday, and he wasn't awkward like he used to kind of be when he's in Calgary, and you know, he looked older, didn't he? I don't know why you'd say that. I don't mean like old, but he just looked more mature and maybe more of a leadership role.
Yeah, he's a dad now.
You know, that does change you, believe me.
You know, I'll have to take your word.
That does change you. Yeah. Penalty shot, I thought, was hilarious and fitting as could be.
Mm-hmm. I would have thought, you know, it would have been kind of nicer to see like a big save out of it, but I'm sure there was some nerves on his side. And I mean, it's amazing that happened at all, so it is kind of a funny little aside.
I just thought, oh man, you couldn't script this any other way, you know. It was fitting.
Well, then him to be stripped of the puck in overtime on the winning goal too by Hanifin, like, as a Flames fan, I mean, you can't really draw it up a whole lot better than that, especially for a guy who's an absolute wizard in overtime. I don't think there's a better player in the league in overtime than Johnny Gaudreau.
He never touched the puck in overtime, and you're right. He was the guy standing back watching Dubé slap that into the net on the one-timer, and it's like, this is just like, yeah, this is exactly the way of the
exactly like you said, man. It's, you know, it's like the turning of the page. You know, we finally get to this date. The date has passed. Everybody moves on, and it's, you know, put it in the win column.
And I'm happy to get it behind us, to be honest with you. I wish it would have taken so long. And not to overshadow, I thought Johnny Gaudreau was really good last night. Two beautiful passes that led to goals. And he had a tip that clanked off the post in the third period that could have tied the game up. And, man, or could have actually sent Columbus ahead. So, all in all, really a good performance from Johnny Gaudreau in his reunion. The Dubé goal was clutch though last night. That guy is coming through lately big time. Mangiapane had a really good game last night.
3 points, yep.
Minus the line A goal, I thought Vladar was fine. I can't say he was great last night, but I thought he was fine.
Well, I thought he was fine too, but I'm still concerned. I think he should get the next start, but I'm a little worried that they're going to go back to Markstrom just because he was merely fine or okay in this game.
I know if I was, I would give him probably the Chicago start and give Markstrom the Seattle start. But if I had to put money on it, I would bet that they go Markstrom.
I don't know. I'd go Vladar against Seattle because Seattle's a really strong team and Vladar's been the better goaltender. I might give Markstrom Chicago just because it should be a good confidence building game for him, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't last time.
No.
I don't know.
Should be.
It should be. You're right. It really, really should be.
Yeah. So the other thing that was a little bit concerning, obviously, last night that we should talk a bit about, Chris Tanev.
Yeah.
So that...
I have not heard an update today. All I've heard that he was being evaluated. That is the latest update that I've heard.
Yeah, I think the Flames are off today as well, so there'll be no update until tomorrow to see if he practices or not. Now, there's some speculation that it's concussion-related, others speculating it's a shoulder injury. I would lean more towards shoulder, but he's had issues with both.
I'll pull up the team media site here and see if they were off today. I think they were.
Yeah. So, in any case,
they had the poker tournament today.
Okay. In any case, if he misses any length of time at all, that's a huge hole to fill. I don't think there's any argument to be made otherwise that he is the team's most important defenseman.
Why, and I couldn't agree more, that I know it's going to probably be, he's probably the one guy that if we all had to pick one guy not to get injured this year, it would have probably been Tanev. Why do you think that is such a factor for this team?
He's the most consistent player on their blue line. He's the most mistake-free. He's the safest guy to have on the ice in any situation. He makes play, the guy whoever's playing with better. So you're not just losing Tanev, you're losing whoever he would typically play with. In terms of how good they typically are. So I just think a player like that, he's definitely irreplaceable. And the first person to get the call up in that situation is probably Dennis Gilbert because he did show well when he did play. But hopefully that's not necessary and Tanev is okay because he's very, very important to this team.
Well, I don't know if I want to see Stone and Gilbert together.
Yeah, if we don't for sure.
I don't know. Do you have to? I mean, let's worst case scenario this and Tanev's out for the season. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer, but like to me, it looked scary in that aspect, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that happens, or are we all of a sudden in search of a, and I think we were before this happens, but all of a sudden are we in search of a top four defenseman?
Well, I think you're right in on guys like Luke Shen, guys that, you know, that aren't going to replace Tanev, but can come in and eat up a lot of those minutes. You can't, if Tanev is to miss any significant amount of time, then you can't believe you're going to make the playoffs without him, in my mind. So you got to search for somebody outside the organization.
Yeah, boy, I was really hoping that like a Connor Mackey would step up this year.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I thought it was the year that, and who knows? I mean, sometimes injuries change the way people respond too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do for sure. I mean, there's still that hope for, you know, more by a committee, but again, there's a lot of intangibles that are really, really hard to replace. Like really hard to replace. So if he's out, even if he misses, I mean, like you said yourself, they're already looking, I think, at other D options in the trade market. But if he misses any length of time, I mean, fortunately the break is coming up, which may help with his recovery.
Yeah.
But still, they got to be looking at all options.
Yeah, I'm worried about cap space too. Like how much, you know, how much can they go get right now? What do they have today? They have $2 million. Little over $2 million in cap space available to them, and boy, I don't know.
It could be a situation like 2015 when Giordano got hurt and they went after Dave Slomko. Turned out to be a great fit. There's always diamonds in the rough.
Really, really good, didn't it?
Yeah, always diamonds in the rough. So it's worth the, you know, you should always look around everywhere for whatever help you can get.
It's going to be an interesting trade deadline. I saw a little fact there. 12 NHL teams have no cap space. 17 have players on LTIR, and 27 teams have less than $3 million.
Oh, man. That's wild.
It's going to be crazy. I don't know how that all fits in. You know, I don't know how a lot of moves are going to be made. They're going to have to get really, really crafty on making moves to help this cap situation.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So
Brett Ritchie looks like he's getting close to return. Mm-hmm. He's been skating with the team, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, well, you mentioned him before, but you're kind of a fan of his game this season, and I agree with you. Like, he's been pretty good. So,
as a lot of weird ones. As a fourth liner, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're looking for a weird one. He'll get you that.
Yeah.
I don't think he's scored any normal ones this year.
No, my only concern with him being healthy again is I don't want to see Dewar or Pelletier come out of that lineup because they've both been dynamite.
I don't think Dewar can right now. I
don't think Pelche can either. He fits right in.
Size is a little bigger with Dewar. I think Pelche has been fine. Let's talk about that. I think Pelche has been fine. I think it's unfair to judge right now whether it's good or bad.
I think his speed's been exceptional, and he's been in on the play a lot, so. Not, like I said, a very small sample size, but he looks like an everyday NHL player to me. What he is at the NHL level, obviously we have no idea yet, but he looks like he belongs there.
Yeah, no, I think he's made some really good plays. He had the only time that I saw where I was like, oh man, he had a turnover in the neutral zone last night. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it's been fairly mistake free and quite honestly has had a couple golden chances to score. He had one in each game that I thought he had a pretty good chance of burying.
I think Friday you see him put one in if he's in the lineup.
This is a little different looking fourth line. I know a lot of the fans are screaming for Ziska to center Dewar and Pelche. And I don't know how I feel about that simply because I don't know that Ziska is the guy. I mean, him being the odd man out right now isn't, we're not missing him, are we?
Just hasn't been that good. Been very lazy, as you had pointed out before.
I don't know. We're not missing anything without him in the lineup. how do you feel about Peltier's spot in the, on the fourth line?
Logical starting point. I mean, he's been, I think it's good to play alongside a veteran like Lewis and kind of learn from him. You know, they're easing him into the league, which I don't have a problem with, but I'd like to see him move up the lineup at some point. I'm still not a fan of Lucic on the second line. I'm not saying Peltier belongs there, but
we know
that. No, yeah, I don't think anybody is, but Peltier is, he's doing good where he is. And I think we're going to see him move up here and then over the next couple of games, assuming, you know, he stays in the lineup.
I would like to see him get a shot up there. Whether it be the Chicago game or the Seattle game, I don't think that's going to happen. And maybe it's not the time. I mean, he's literally had played a little over 5 minutes in the Tampa Bay game, and I didn't look like I did the stats.
But a little bit over seven last night. Yeah. 7:42, I believe.
And I thought he looked really good last night, and that's a good sign. Now, I still don't want to. I don't think it'd be fair for us to ever judge any player on a total of 13 minutes in the league.
Oh, God, no. But there's been no glaring mistakes. You mentioned a giveaway last night, of course, but otherwise been very, very good and for the small sample size we've seen. So I'm not really too keen to say a lot about him other than the fact I think he's fitting in just fine, and hopefully we see more of him.
Let's talk a little bit about the post-game press conference after – after Peltier's first game. And Daryl Sutter, everybody heard it. We don't need to go through that and reiterate what he said, but he asked what number he is and just read off his staff. Now, there's a lot of different ways to look at this, and I went through the whole gamut of, like, what a dick move to a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you at on this topic?
I wanted to believe it was a troll job in the media, but talking to people in the league, I get more of the impression that it was just a really unprofessional thing to do and a really bad look for him as a coach, and I think that's why he kind of came off of it yesterday when we were talking about Peltier. It was a lot more complimentary.
I think he even realized that it was an unprofessional move.
Yeah, it was just no need to go there, you know? Like...
But I firmly believe, and even Jacob Peltier said this too, that he didn't, this is not how he communicates in the room. I think there's a huge difference on how Daryl Sutter talks to his players in the room and how he talks to the media about his players.
Yeah, as it should be.
I think it's a night and day difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know why it was necessary to go down that road. Like, I don't know, like, are you trying to curb enthusiasm? But what, I don't understand what you're gaining by that.
I just think he has a weird sense of humor, for one. He likes to have fun with the media, but you shouldn't do it at the expense of others, and that's what he did.
I think he was trying to be funny.
Yeah, I think he was too. It just completely backfired.
It just wasn't funny this time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I know me and you have argued about this. I do think that the fan base in Calgary is a lot enamored with trying to make sure the youth are successful, which I'm all for that. I don't know. The reason I'm for it mostly is because in today's day and age, I believe with the salary cap the way it's set, you have to have a few young players making $700,000 that are impactful players on your team for your team to be successful within the cap constraints. Now, we keep trying to shove, you know, the Trevor Lewis's, and I'm not knocking Trevor Lewis, I'm using him as an example. Richie's another example. We went through three or four in the previous seasons. I think I'd rather try a $700,000 a year prospect instead of the 32-year-old veteran, because right now the veterans aren't getting it done in my mind. Albeit Trevor Lewis has been pretty good and Richie has been pretty good, but
sure, but like
a lot of them.
Yeah, like you said though, the outset of your statement there, like that's how teams win now. You have to integrate players in your lineup, you know, that earn a spot, that make the same money as an older, aging out player, if we can call him that. I think they bring a lot of speed and enthusiasm that the lineup desperately needs, especially now. So yeah, like to me, it's a no-brainer to work these guys into the lineup because you're just not going to have success any other way.
And I do believe deep down, and I'm not trying to be a Daryl Sutter defender because this is the one year that I've actually, this is probably the only year, back when he was GM, I got a little bent out of shape a few times. But,
yeah, we all did.
In his coaching career at in Calgary, this is probably the first time I've ever, like, not went to bat for him or, like, was pissed off at him. He's done a few things this year that have irritated the hell out of me. This, the constant, support, or I don't know if support's the right word, the, you know, making sure Lucic is a key part of every freaking lineup is growing really old with me. Mm-hmm. Some of his placements in the third period when we're down a goal have frustrated the hell out of me. And not so much how much he's played the young players, kind of how he's treated them along the way.
Yeah, well, he's kind of, that's
in the media, in the media, because yeah. I've heard that it's completely different in the locker room.
I mean, I've heard similar things. I've also heard people who are not fans of his because of how he carries himself, and you kind of take the good with the bad. I think that, well, at the end of the day, what he's looking for most of all is an honest effort from his players, and unfortunately, sometimes he's blind to that, seemingly, because there's guys who are still getting gifted ice time who we've already discussed at length who don't necessarily deserve it, so... If he's able to adjust his approach such a guy as a Walker do and Jacob Beltier can go into the lineup and, you know, assert themselves and be given an opportunity, then I'm okay with it. If we keep trotting out the same older, ineffective lineup, then I increasingly have more and more of an issue with it.
I couldn't agree more. I just don't know, like, I'm an old school guy and I just don't like the mind games. I don't know what that, I think it's okay to be an old school coach like Daryl is, but I think you need to adjust slightly with the times. And I don't know. I think he's got to open his mind a little bit, and hopefully the last two games, the lineups, having two young players in there is signs that maybe that's coming to fruition, but.
Hope so.
I think it's good. I think it's good to have though that young speed in the lineup, and whether it be not having quite as a big of a bruising fourth line, it's good to have that for the teams when we need that big bruising fourth line. You know what I mean? I find it interesting to see how this progresses over the next, you know, from here to deadline, I guess, and how it would change if we brought in a winger.
Well, that's exactly it, right? Are we witnessing some progressive changes that make the team better, or is it just kind of tweaks because what you're doing isn't working? He's going to go back to his old ways. Like, you know, well, it'll be another 10 games where we have a real firm answer on that, I think.
I think you're right, and I think if we can put a little run together here, it would make it a hell of a lot harder to go back to the old.
Well, 2-0 with the young guys in the lineup, with the two of them, so... It's not significant, but it's not insignificant either.
Walker Duehr has got a little bit longer run here now, probably more than anybody as far as prospect-wise. Mm-hmm. I really like what he brings on a night-to-night basis. He's a fast skater. He's physical. And we've seen he can put the puck in the net, too.
He's been favorably compared to Gardner Hathaway a few times, but I think he might actually have a bit more of a scoring touch than Hathaway did here, so... he brings you a little bit of everything, and if he can keep doing that, I mean, why wouldn't you dress him?
He's going to be the guy that I think that they're going to have the hardest time not sitting.
Absolutely, I think so far.
I hate to say this. If Richie comes and he's ready to go, then I think Peltier comes out of the lineup. Although I wish that Lucic would come out of the lineup and he'd slide into that position, but I don't think that's going to happen. No. I don't know how you look at Walker Duehr right now and say you're not playing tonight. I don't know how you do that.
You don't. He's earned his spot and he keeps it until he doesn't, in my mind.
Yeah. Trevor Lewis gets heat. And I don't have a problem with Trevor Lewis's game ever. Like, does he ever make you mad out there? He doesn't make me mad.
No, he's a Lewis. Why would he make me mad? But no, he doesn't. I mean, I don't see him commit any egregious errors. I see him miss chances
But I don't ever look for him to be the guy that, you know, puts one in the net. I just look for him.
No, he's a cheap, reliable forward. Yeah. He is what he is. Yeah. People love to dump on guys like that, and it just doesn't interest me. It's like, you know what? He plays his role exactly as expected. You just live with it. He's a good guy to have in your dressing room and in the lineup most nights. And I mean, there's times he should probably sit too based on where he's at on his odometer, but there's no glaring issues like we talked about with some of the other guys.
Daryl Sutter did take a franchise history. He's the winningest coach for the Calgary Flames. He took over Badger Bob Johnson. Sutter has 194 wins. I don't know. It's the first time we've ever had a coach. Oh, it's this first time we've seen Sutter get heat in the Flames community. It's funny, though. I do think that if we keep winning, it's funny how that stuff just disappears when you win, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If we go on a bit of a streak here, it'll all be forgotten even.
Yeah.
But it's not surprising that he's the winningest coach when you think about it. I mean, he led a couple of really good regular season teams. And then last year alone, I mean, that's a hell of a lot of wins in a single season, right? Was it 52 or something? Like,
and we've had a coaching carousel in Calgary.
Man, we'll make a drinking game out of that some night.
There's been a lot of them. Just look at the last 10 years, how many you can name
the names like, right now, like Mike Keenan, Al Arbor, Don Hay, Greg Gilbert, like, I could go on for hours.
Oh, it's Glenn Gulletson and, yeah. Jim Playfair.
Yep.
Bob Hartley.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Ward. We loved him, didn't we?
Yeah,
we loved
him. Yeah, let's not go on there. Try to keep our show positive, Brad. Come on.
Where's he at now?
I don't know. I'll see if I can find out, though. That's a great question.
I don't know. I've referenced him a ton this year when Sutter's had dumb lines out there, but,
Yeah, he's assistant with Anaheim. I did know that.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Right down there, just doing well with the Ducks.
Moving on.
Let's move on here to some game previews.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
Flames back in action Thursday night when the Blackhawks come to town. Second of three meetings, Chicago. Yeah, lowly Chicago beats the Flames on January 8th, 4-3 in overtime, and we only get a point out of that one. And these are the games that scare the crap out of me, Kyle, just like last night, where it's like, these are teams that we have to get points from.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we can't afford another letdown against this team. Actually, if anything, Calgary needs to come out and smoke them, make a statement. You know, maybe that's the elusive shutout that we keep talking about that still hasn't happened.
Oh, I'm probably gonna faint if they do that this year. Calgary currently dead ass last in the Central with 32 points. They have been actually playing a little better of lately, but are in full Connor Bedard mode. Back to back before the break. Flames head to Seattle on Friday night, second night of a back-to-back, and then we go into the long 9-day All-Star / CBA break. I hate that. I hate it so much.
It's so
dumb.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine that the players like it.
Well, was it last year that we went on an absolute tear after the break?
Right after the break we did. Well, we had a COVID break last year.
That's what it was, the COVID breaker, right?
And we came back, right, because last year was going to be the Olympic break, and then that got nixed. And then we had a COVID break instead, and right after the COVID break, we went into the COVID break junk and came out like a whole new team. So, I don't know. I think these last two games heading into that break are critical. I think these are super, super important
games. You need all 4 points, especially against Seattle and especially against Chicago, where they're such a bottom-feeding team. So, you got to take the 4 points for sure.
Seattle currently sits second in the Pacific, 59 points. The Flames only four. It seems like we should be a mile back. Flames are four back. Seattle has played two less games, so they have us in that aspect. And this is the third and final meeting of the teams. Seattle beat Calgary in Calgary 5-4, and Calgary handed the Kraken, a 3-2 loss on December 28th in Seattle. This is one of the, you gotta circle on the schedule and hope. And these always scare me, you know, it's always like the game before Christmas break scares me. And then now the game before this CBA break, just because our players going to be checked out.
I can't see it. Points are too important right now. They're not in a very enviable position, but they're very close still. So,
and it's better to have the game on the road.
Yeah.
Better to have the game on the road.
Absolutely. So we shall see.
It'll be a very telling week this week. Hopefully, when they get their act together and we get the 4 points that we so drastically need. So, lots of controversy this week. It was kind of a, I don't know. I'm glad the Gaudreau thing's behind us. I think, the Sutter thing will calm down now, because I actually think that Darryl felt like he might have overstepped the bounds a little bit there.
Well, and he did. So hopefully he does feel that way and doesn't do it again.
I think it's good to push prospects, but I don't think you need to degrade prospects.
Yeah, push the prospect. Right? You know, you don't have to talk about it in the media like you did. No. You know, don't say a lot. Just, you know, don't say much.
Sometimes it's better just to be quiet, right, Kyle?
That's what my girlfriend tells me.
Oh, man. Kyle and I are back again next week, hopefully with less technical difficulties. And I don't know. I was out of sorts tonight. We'll see. We're back next week talking Flames hockey, and we'll start to dive into trade deadline, and we'll be through the, we'll be in the break. So we'll have to talk about where the Flames are going to be at, and should be a good show. Have a fun week, Flames fans, and check us out on all the major podcast players over on YouTube. We need 4 points, Kyle. We need them bad.
Very much bad. So fingers crossed, toes crossed, and let's make her happen.
Have a good week, Flames fans.
Take care, guys.
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. Check out the Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Host Brad Brood is on Twitter at Brad Brood. And host Kyle Lewis is on Twitter at VanLewis14. Like what you hear? Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Flames Unfiltered can be found on all the major podcast players. Want to watch the show? You got it. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group for every show. Subscribe while you watch. Thanks for listening, watching, and interacting. Enjoy the hockey action.
We call them playoff! Yeah, baby! Playoff! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.